B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, the guy who will grant you a mulligan, but then remind you about it the whole ride home. Ask me how I know. Charlie Nance.
Hey there, welcome back once again. We're Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy. Well, we're definitely in the home stretch for 2019. This week, the Hero World Challenge event, Tiger's Tournament, being held on what is apparently the richest island on planet Earth in the Bahamas. I mean, they keep showing Tiger's yacht. Tiger's yacht is no dinghy, but that's exactly what it looks like. It looks like Judge Smales' dinghy from Caddyshack in comparison to what's docked around him. It's amazing. Wow. Next week is the President's Cup in Australia. Honestly, the only story for me next week will be, can the Americans secure the cup before the Sunday singles? I really think that's in play. And if that happens, they may need to start rethinking the President's Cup. Anyway, this week we got a couple of great 10 predictive question surveys from Ryan Ballingy of thegolfnewsnet.com. And we begin today with Ron Cyrak of ronsyrak.com and The Golf Channel, a past recipient of the PGA of America's Lifetime Achievement Award in Journalism. Ron, before we get into our 10 predictive questions, I wanted to ask you about some news that just broke recently. And that is Michelle Wee joining the CBS broadcast team. And that includes broadcast duties at the Masters. Look, there's nobody arguing she was fantastic on the Golf Channel during the Solheim Cup. But did this move surprise you? And does this mean that the career may be winding down, if not over, as far as a playing?
Yeah, you know, it didn't surprise me in the sense that I did have the feeling that Michelle's is looking down the road, is looking for what's next. Dottie Pepper paved the way for her there. She became the first woman to broadcast through the Masters, and that opened the door for Michelle. But, you know, I was at the KPMG when Michelle shot some really, really big numbers and missed the cut. And the fact that she finished 36 holes said to me that she was sort of maybe seeing the window closing. You know, she's had so many injuries, so many illnesses. And, you know, now she's got a guy in her life and she may be looking at what's next for her.
Yeah, I was thinking when I saw the news, what I thought of was actually Andrew Luck of the Indianapolis Colts when he retired unexpectedly this fall. And he talked about the cycle of being injured and rehab and injured and rehab and never being able to really get off of that cycle and just play the game and how he was just sick and tired of it. And I thought about Michelle Wee that way, that it just seems to me she's always injured and recovering and having surgery and waiting to see if she needs to have surgery. And after a while, you just got to say, okay, I'm done with this.
And, you know, think about it. She turned 30 in October. I've been covering her for 17 years.
So she's
spent more than half of her life trying to grow up in the public spotlight. And that's really hard. You know, I see it with other players. I think we're seeing Lexi Thompson trying to go through that now. And Lexi's trying to find what there is in life besides golf to make her happy. And, you know, and I think that Michelle and I think that Michelle got thrown into some really unusually difficult situations early on. And she's 14 years old and she's playing against male professionals, you know, and I think that a lot of that put her behind the eight ball and made the expectations were off the charts way too early about what people thought. I mean, you know, people thought she was going to play in the Masters and there were just unreasonable expectations, unreasonable burdens put on her. You look at her career, she's got four or five wins, a major championship, the 2014 U.S. Women's Open. She was a real, real stalwart on the U.S. Solheim Cup team. She's had a very, very good career, but nowhere near the career we thought she was going to have.
Yeah, I remember a shootout with Lexi that year out in the Palm Springs in the first major of the year. She almost won that one, and then of course she was flawless at Pinehurst. That was just a magical week for her. And you know what? If you finish your career and you say I won a U.S. Open, then that's pretty good, right?
Yeah, you know, in 2006, at the age of 16, she finished in the top five in three majors that year. You know, so she played, and I think she played some of her best golf in her early and middle teens. And you know, I was always in the camp that I thought she wasn't pursuing the right path. I thought instead of trying to make the cut against male professionals, she should have been trying to go out and beat girls her own age and develop a winner's mentality the way Tiger Woods did. You know, before Tiger Woods turned pro, he'd won three straight U.S. juniors, three straight U.S. amateurs, an NCAA championship. You know, he had built up a mindset of domination, and Michelle didn't get to travel down that road, and I think all of that made it harder for her.
We wish her nothing but the best, and I think she is going to be dynamite.
I think so, too. She's going to be terrific.
She is really going to be good. 10 predictive questions with Ron Cyrak of ronsyrak.com and the Golf Channel. I always like to start with a Tiger Woods question. Will Tiger break the tie with Sam Snead for career tour wins this year, and if so, does he do it before or after the Masters?
I'm going to say no and no.
Wow. So. You're the first no on this.
Yeah, I felt all along that Tiger had one more magic moment left in him for us, and I think we might have seen it at Augusta National in April. He played well in Japan but boy, in the middle of the year he looked exhausted. He looked worn out. The wild card in all this is how his body holds up. He's 44 years older. He's going to be 44 by the end of the year.
Well, I tell you, I'm going to be most intrigued as we're recording this conversation. Tiger's playing at his hero tournament in the Bahamas and then has to get on an airplane for 20-some-odd hours to get to Australia. I'm going to be fascinated to see how that 20-plus-hour flight affects Tiger Woods' back. It can't do wonders for it.
And I'm going to be fascinated to see what kind of competitive schedule he presents us with next year. You know, will he go the Hogan route and only play six or seven tournaments and focus entirely on the majors? Or will he try to play a 15-tournament schedule, which is the minimum required to keep your PGA Tour card? It'll be fascinating to see what he does.
Which is more likely to happen first? Jordan Spieth wins again, or Jordan Spieth parts ways with caddy Michael Greller, as eventually all caddies take the blame for lack of success?
I'm going to say he's going to win. I'm going to say that what will happen is that he'll win again first, just because I'm a believer in him, and I've been wrong for about two or three years now expecting the comeback to start. But I am a believer in him. That said, I do wish he and Michael would talk a lot less on the golf course and he would just play golf. Just go out and play the game and be a kid and be that wonderful field player that you are back when he was. Look, Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods, the two best putters I ever saw from inside 10 feet. The best putter I've ever seen from outside 20 feet is Jordan Spieth.
Oh, makes a ton of bombs. Yeah, little helpful hint from the media to the players. There are parabolic mics everywhere on the golf course. If you don't talk to your caddy, there's nothing for us to ask you about in terms of conversation with your caddy. And so you could just head that off at the pass.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, there's sometimes I just want to yell out to them, just hit the ball,
Ron, last year I asked if Brooks Koepka was more likely to build off his major championship success or have that chasing appearance fees hangover we see so often. Obviously, he was outstanding. Number of major championships Brooks wins this year, and I'll set the number at 1.5.
Well, I've got the under on that. I think he'll win one. Multiple majors in this era is really difficult because, you know, in an era where we don't have the clear Tiger Woods, the clear Jack Nicklaus out there, what we do have is five or six or seven players who on any given week are capable of being the best player in the world. And that's what Brooks up against. And I'm going to say one only because McIlroy is going to do something and we're going to see other people burst through. So I'll say one.
Thanks for bringing up Rory. A sort of a side note to this question, even though Rory, I don't think, is going to participate on tour again until Torrey Pines. Is it a foregone conclusion that he's going to move up to number one in the world sooner rather than later?
You know, I think so. I mean, it's been my feeling for a decade. When was it? It was 2010. I was at Quail Hollow when he shot 62 on Sunday at the age of 20 to win that tournament. And I've sort of felt since then that when he has his A game, he's the best player in the world. And the thing that Rory hasn't proven to us, to anybody, is that he can win when he doesn't have his A game. And he showed, I thought this past year he showed some glimmers of struggling better, of trying to gut it out better. You know, when he started horribly at the British Open, he then sort of tried to fight his way back, you know, and almost made it to the weekend. When he's got his A game, I think he's the best player in the world.
Ron Cyrak with RonCyrak.com and the Golf Channel, our guest taking Dead Aim, 10 predictive questions for 2020. Augusta National, Harding Park, Wingfoot, the West Course, and Royal St. George's. Those are the sites of this year's majors. With those in mind, will we have more first-time winners or more past major winners taking another?
That's a good question. I think, you know, I mean, more first time winners. I'm going to say we're going to get a split. We're going to get two first time winners and two repeats.
I think so. Everybody's been sort of feeling along those lines too. I think of the ones that I'm looking forward to, I loved the President's Cup at Harding Park. What was it, in 2011 or something like that? It was a great, or 2009. It was a great venue. And I think that's going to be a fun PGA. I think that course is not going to, I thought that Beth Page really limited the field as far as who could win that thing because it was just so huge. I think that Harding Park is the kind of ball field that brings more people into the game. And I think the PGA could be a real shootout in May.
Yeah, you know, and I look at both Koepka and McIlroy have great games for Augusta National. I think Spieth fits Wingfoot really well. That's a second shot golf course, mm-hmm. and it's the kind of place that he could play really well. And of all the British Open venues, Royal St. George's is the only one I haven't been to.
Are you going to mark that one off your list? You going to head over?
I don't know. I got to find if somebody will hire me and send me over.
There you go. Ron Cyrak's looking for an expense account, boys and girls. Colin Morikawa, Victor Hovland, Matthew Wolf. Those are three guys who turned pro in the spring, and throughout the summer they were fascinating. They were great. Which is the first to win a major, and do you think it could happen this year?
I do think it can happen this year, and I'm going to go with Hovland. You know, I mean, all of them, they've all shown that the stage isn't too big for them,
right?
You know, and that's, you know, that's part of what that's part of the psychic change that well, first Tiger Woods brought to the game, and then after Tiger, with Spieth and Justin Thomas and Rory McIlroy and everything, that whole idea that you can't win at an early age is out the window. You can, and those guys have all played really, really well under extreme pressure on the big stage. But, you know, I'm going to go with Hovland.
Ron, speaking of majors, John Rahm, Patrick Cantlay, Xander Schauffele, Bryson DeChambeau. Currently, those are the four in the top 10 in the overall world golf rankings who do not have a major on their resume. This year, one, some, or none breakthrough out of those four?
I'm going to pick Xander Schauffele to win a major, every major until he does, because it's going to happen eventually.
That's a very good bet.
I went 10 years picking Jim Furyk in the U.S. Open, and the year that I stopped picking him was Olympia Fields in Chicago when he finally won. So,
I used to work with a guy here at the radio station who every single major picked Sergio Garcia for years, and when it finally happened, he literally looked us in the eye and said, "Told you."
Well, Schauffele is, I mean, you talk about people who play well on the big stage. The guy plays his best golf on the biggest tournaments. You know, he's like, you look up and his name's always on the leaderboard. But, you know, on the other hand, maybe he becomes his generation's Matt Kuchar, you know, and is like, you know, you can write T6 next to his name every major championship, or Lee Westwood. But I think Schauffele is going to get a major.
Ron, he's just fallen out of the top 50 for the first time in more than two decades. Victories for Phil Mickelson this year on tour, and again, I'm going to set the number at 1.5.
I'll go under, but he is going to get one. He is going to get one. Phil's not ready to go away yet. His problem, and he sort of admitted this to me 10 years ago, is maintaining concentration for four straight days over 72 holes. But, you know, he's not going to be able to do that a lot, but he's going to figure it out someplace. I think he's still enormously talented. Because of that long swing that he hasn't really lost any distance off the tee. He's still got – his swing hasn't shortened up the way a lot of people's do as they get into their third decade on tour. Phil's going to win one, but I don't think it'll be more than one.
As sort of a side note, Phil's going to turn 50 at the U.S. Open. So yep. This question comes into play. Number of PGA Tour Champions majors that Phil plays in this year, and I'll also set that number at 1.5.
You know what? I'll go with the over on that because, and I'll say that not knowing exactly. I know he turns in June. He turns 50, and not exactly knowing when the schedule is and when the events are, but. I think Phil is going to be – there's going to be a lot – this next generation coming along have all made so much money. It'll be fascinating to see how many of them really want to go out and play champions. But Phil's going to be one because he loves the competition and he loves to win. So we're going to see him out there. So I'll take the over. He's going to play too.
I couldn't agree with you more on that as far as the generation coming out. I remember having a conversation with Lee Trevino when very first Pro-Am I ever played when it was still the senior tour. And Lee described what he was doing, and this is in the early 2000s. He says, man, this is life's great mulligan for us. We yep. didn't get to make the money that they're making now, and we get to go out, he says, and it's guaranteed money every week. And he was happy as a clam, but it's like you said, these guys, even, you know, look, Charles Howe has had a nice career, but if you look at Charles Howe's financials, it's unbelievable what he's done.
He's probably in the top 10 on the career money.
Yes, list, you know? And you know, these are the guys that are going to be coming out, and at some point, you got to look and say, do I really want to go on the road every week? You know, I'll be fascinated like you will.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you look at Hale Irwin easily won way more money on the senior tour than he won on the regular tour. And I'm guessing that Bernhard Langer probably has also.
Oh, there's no question. No question about that. Ron Cyrak with Ron Cyrak and the Golf Channel, our guest taking Dead Aim, 10 predictive questions for 2020. In 2016, all we heard about was how the Olympics weren't important and golfers were coming up with reasons and excuses not to play. This year, how big a deal is it going to be for the top players to openly pursue spots on their country's Olympic teams?
I think almost without exception, the players who didn't go to Rio regretted it.
I think so, too.
First off, both the men's and the women's tournaments turned out to be better than I thought they were going to be. I wasn't a fan of the format at first. I would have liked to have seen something more like what the women do with the International Crown, you know, mm-hmm. four-person teams playing in groups to bring the national element into it. But if you look at it, the six medal winners in three men and the three women, the six medal winners came from six different countries, you know. And you look at who won, NB Park and Justin Rose with the gold medals, those are major champions. Everything about it worked. And the concerns that people might have had for safety, both physical safety and health safety with Brazil, aren't there in Japan.
No, Tokyo is New York City. They're not worried about a thing.
Exactly. It's not, you know, they don't have to worry about the Zika virus or getting mugged. You know, nothing's going to happen over there. So it is going to be, but I do think that all the players who didn't go in 2016 regret it because they saw how cool it is to be in that opening ceremony.
Well, you know how cool it is. Yeah.
I mean, how cool was it to see Kuchar fighting for third place?
Yes.
You know? I mean, what other golf tournament is finishing third a victory? You know.
Well, and
that's something that I didn't think of until it happened.
Now, you're around MB Park much more than I am, but I remember what I thought it was really cool and really neat. Justin Rose took so much pride in winning that gold medal. He carried it in his golf bag the whole next year and yep. stuck it in everyone's face any and every opportunity he could. He really took pride in that, and I loved that. Was NB as pleased with winning the gold medal on the women's side?
NB skipped two LPGA majors in order to get healthy for the Olympics.
That's right. I forgot about that.
That's how important it was for her. She was having issues with her thumb, and she skipped two LPGA majors so that she could be healthy for the Olympics. In a country like Korea, the Olympic gold medals is it. that's a bigger deal than winning the U.S. Open for them in Korea. Is they love those. They have that Olympic mentality, and it was a huge, huge deal for MB.
Ron, the drumbeats for this continues to get louder. In 2020, would you be more surprised if golf's powers that be started to make moves towards equipment bifurcation, or more surprised if they didn't?
I'd be more surprised if they did. I think we're still a ways away from that. Look, the issue of how far the golf ball goes, and in my mind, more than the 350-yard drive is the 210-yard 7-iron that's changing the
yes.
game. You know, I mean, hitting that high shot would spin in from 210 out. You know, we used to when I was a kid, they were hitting four woods from that distance into greens. That's changed the game, but it's not going to become a front burner issue until A, the entertainment value of the PGA Tour is threatened by it. And right now it's not. People like the drivable par four. They didn't think 427 was going to be a drivable par four, but they like the drivable par four. The other thing, and to me, you know, what's part of what's cool about baseball is Fenway Park and Wrigley Field are still relevant. If we get to the point where the old course at St. Andrews or perish the thought Augusta National become obsolete because of distance, that would be a tragedy. We've already lost some really good courses because they're not long enough. But that's when it really becomes a front burner issue of are we going to have to deal with equipment standards so that we don't lose these iconic venues. St. Andrews already, there's six drivable par fours on St. Andrews if the wind's not blowing, you know?
Yeah. True or false, America takes back the Ryder Cup at Whistling Straits?
I'll confess something to you. Secretly, I always root for Europe because it's a way better story. As a writer, you always root for the best story. Europe has this amazing ability. No matter how many times they win the Ryder Cup, they come in as the underdog, you know, and they act like and they have that. They have a healthy chip on their shoulder. That said, U.S. is going to win.
All right, get you out of here on this. Ron Cyrak with RonCyrak.com and the Golf Channel, our guest taking Dead Aim. 10 predictive questions for 2020. As your bonus question, this one's strictly for you because you're such my go-to for the LPGA. We talked after the Solheim Cup, and I was absolutely as enthusiastic and as big a stock buyer as I've ever been in the LPGA Tour after the Solheim Cup because of this. And this is just off the top of my head. You got Nelly and Jessica Korda. You got Danielle King. You got Brittany Altomare. You got Lexi Thompson. Jennifer Kupcho came on at the end of the year, turning pro as an amateur. For the first time in several years, I see a lot of talent on the American side, which is what the LPGA Tour needs. Do you think that this could be the year that we have one or two of these girls step up, sort of take their career to the next level, and cause the casual golf fans' eyes to look more to the LPGA Tour?
Very quietly, there are three Americans in the Rolex rankings top 10, and no other country has more. Korea also has three. So the Americans are in there. Nelly Korda's at number three right now. And she's got Sung-Hyun Park and Jin Young Ko ahead of her. And Jin Young Ko is going to be hard to catch. She's somebody, a word I don't use lightly, she reminds me of Annika because she doesn't beat herself. But that said, all those names that you mentioned, and if you look at it, and it wasn't true just for the Americans, it was true for the Europeans too. Everybody came out of that Solheim Cup with a Solheim Cup high. You saw Danielle Kang winning after it. You saw every American out there. Nelly Korda won after it. They all were playing really, really. Carlotta Singanda won after it on the LET. They were all playing really well. But I do think the Americans, and the Americans had six rookies on that team. And players like Amy Olsen and Allie McDonald are only going to get better. Danielle Kang has quietly been one of the most consistent players in the world for 2 years right now. There's good things ahead for American golf.
From RonCyrak.com and the Golf Channel, that's Ron Cyrak, a past recipient of the PGA of America's Lifetime Achievement Award in Journalism. And when we return, Ryan Ballingy of TheGolfNewsNet.com takes dead aim at the 2020 golf season with 10 predictive questions presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We are Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors. Ryan Ballingy is one of the most insightful and thoughtful guys covering golf on a week-in, week-out basis. He's a must-follow on Twitter, and I invite you to check out his website, thegolfnewsnet.com. Ryan, I always like to start with a Tiger Woods question. This year's, will he break the tie with Sam Snead for career tour wins in 2020? And if so, does he do it before or after the Masters?
I think that he will. And I think that's just in part because he's playing pretty well. I mean, if you look at the last few seasons, he's got a win in each season, the Tour Championship, the Masters, and the Zozo Championship. So it seems stand to reason that he could win another one, and also because he tends to play the same events over and over again for a reason, because he wins at them and he likes playing them. So I think he'll pick up another one. I don't know that he'll do it before Augusta. Just because he's going to play such a limited schedule before then that, you know, he'll play Riviera, of course, because he's a host there, but he doesn't have a good record there. So I don't think he'll pick that off. And then you go into the Florida swing and, you know, maybe, I mean, you're asking him to win, I guess, Bay Hill, which is certainly possible.
Bay Hill or the Players or, you know.
Yeah, maybe the Players, but again, not the best record there. Just a couple of wins there.
Right.
But it is a tournament that he does every year. But I would think his best shot would be Bay Hill, so I'm going to say no, not before the Masters.
I don't know if he will actually play a Hogan-esque six-tournament schedule, but would you be surprised if in the future and in the present, you know, Tiger plays maybe 10 events?
I think it just boils down to what he feels his body needs to be both rested and for him to be competitive. And I think that's going to kind of boil down to feel just as much as anything. I mean, I think he has said a couple of times now he feels like he's got a hang of how his body reacts to this type of schedule, having done four surgeries. And he said he played too much in 2018 and that he pared that back in 2019. And now he's going to have to figure out, okay, well, if I pare it back, how do I get ready for the tournaments that count the most to me? And that's obviously the major championships. So I think that's going to be his challenge for 2020, in particular setting up for the PGA Championship, because after that Masters win, he looked like a guy who had no interest really in playing golf, and for good reason, by the way. It was totally fine that he didn't want to play golf, but he didn't seem all that interested in what was going on at Bethpage Black, and he got smoked by Brooks Koepka. But I think he can prepare for the other majors just as he always has. So, you know, maybe it's a 12-event schedule, maybe it's a 15-event schedule. I guess it kind of depends on how he feels, but I think it's, you know, in the low teens.
Ryan, which is more likely to happen first? This is sort of a mean question. Jordan Spieth wins again, or Jordan Spieth parts ways with Michael Greller because eventually all caddies take the blame for lack of success?
I hope that he wins again. I mean, I think Jordan Spieth is a good character for the game. I think he by all accounts, seems like a decent person inside the ropes and manages a great image for himself. I don't know him personally well enough to say anything about him, but I hope that he is a part of the conversation. But he's playing tournaments like a guy who's been lost for the last couple of years. I mean, once we get to the summer, you know, and if we do get to the summer before he wins again, that's 3 years since his last win. That's a long time for a young guy who should be starting to enter the prime of his career. And instead, he's working on this stuff with Cam McCormick that, you know, is just hasn't netted results yet. I mean, he's showed at times on Thursdays and Fridays that he can get into contention. And then throughout the weekend, he's basically the worst guy in the field. His scoring average on Saturday and Sunday on the PGA Tour is one of the worst on the PGA Tour. And if you want to take it into the realm of top 50 players, I'm almost certain it's the worst. So he's got to figure out something in his head at this point. And I don't know how easily you do that. So I hope that he wins first. I hope that the breakthrough is not that far away, but I kind of got a feeling that maybe Michael Greller won't be long for this, or Jordan Spieth won't be long for this relationship.
You know what? What's interesting about Spieth, I was talking with Kyle Porter with CBSSports.com not long ago, and he pointed this out. You know, he hasn't won in forever. His putting stats this last year were the best of his career. Mm-hmm. And in 2015, didn't you think Jordan Spieth made everything he looked at? And this last year, he was a better putter than in 2015. And that shows you how his long game has just gone to pot.
Yeah, if you look at his season this past season, I mean, I think it was three of his top four strokes gained putting rounds were recorded this year. And some of them were outrageous single round numbers. And that kind of buoyed his season. I mean, if it weren't for the putter, he would be way worse than 50th in the official world golf ranking. The one thing that's saving him from outside the top 50 right now is that third place finish at the PGA Championship, which almost kind of came out of nowhere. But it then set up these expectations that, okay, Spieth's back, he'll be fine. He's just working it all out. And then we never saw that again. And I think it does boil down to the good news is he's still got a putter that hasn't been messed up yet. He hasn't tried to do anything to screw that over. But the rest of his game is under so much pressure because he drives the ball so poorly that he has to basically be perfect in the rest of his game. And his iron play is just not where it was in that 2015 stretch. So not as much 16, but certainly 17, when he was an all-world iron player. And since it's not really there, there's just too much pressure on his game off the putting surface.
Ryan Ballingy with thegolfnewsnet.com is our guest, taking Dead Aim 10 predictive questions for 2020. Last year I asked if Brooks Koepka was more likely to build off his major championship success or have that chasing appearance fees hangover that we see so often. Obviously, he was great. Number of majors Brooks wins this year, and I'm going to set the number at 1.5.
I think under 1.5. I mean, I think historically we're asking a lot of anybody if we want them to win more than a major a year.
I agree.
I just think that's too much.
Tiger spoiled us.
Yeah, he did. And I think that it's going to take us a long time. It's going to take golf fans a long time to kind of erase the specter of peak Tiger Woods and the expectations that come with being the best player in the world. And that's what Brooks Koepka is. He is the best player in the world. But the best player in the world after Tiger Woods' peak is not the best player in the world at Tiger Woods' peak. And so I think we have to look at the major venues and you kind of see what lines up, just like we used to do with Tiger, and you look at his Masters record. He has basically gotten better every time he has played the Masters. His finish has improved every single time. So he's only got one place to go from here if that trend were to continue, since he was second this year. So he could win the Masters. I think he's figured out how to play Augusta National in a manner that works for him. If you look at the PGA Championship venue, it's TPC Harding Park. And the lasting memory that I have of that golf course, albeit it has changed in 14 years, is the WGC Amex, which resulted in a playoff between Tiger Woods and John Daly, two of the longest guys you can think of. And that was a tremendous event. And that leaderboard that week, it featured guys who hit the ball a long way and put it in play. That's Brooks Koepka. So I think he looks good there. The U.S. Open should be a really interesting venue this year because it is winged foot. It's going to be difficult. That's the whole calling card of having a U.S. Open there. And they set up Beth Page Black to be difficult, and he handled that just fine. So I feel like those venues, I mean, the Open Championship feels like still something that Brooks hasn't acquired a taste for. So let's say three majors he's got a chance to win. He looks pretty good on all three of the venues. If he picks off one, that's a great year for anybody, but I think he'll get one.
Thanks for bringing up the major championship venues. You already mentioned them all: Augusta National, Harding Park, Wingfoot, the West Course, and Royal St. George's. Outside of Brooks Koepka, I guess, as you look at the venues, are we more likely to have more first-time winners or past major champions adding to their total?
We're at such an interesting place, too, with the young guys that came along 4 or 5 years ago. You think about Dustin Johnson. He's not young anymore. I mean, I'm not saying he's old, but he's not young anymore. He's in his 30s. Rory's in his 30s. Hasn't won a major since 5 years ago now, the double from back then. You've got Spieth, who has gone 3 years winless, although he's been in contention in a number, but certainly hasn't finished one off. And Jason Day has a chronic back problem, which seems to prevent him from forming any kind of string of momentum.
Yeah, and I read that the more and more people are commenting, people who are in the know, that back problem is not going to get better based on his swing mechanics. That there are things that he does that is going to aggravate that time and again. So he's sort of at a crossroads, I think.
Yeah, and that may be the case, and he may have to figure out a way to either just decide to work through it, kind of like Fred Couples tried to, rather unsuccessfully, or does he try to change his golf swing? Well, there aren't a whole lot of people who have rebuilt from the bottom up and gotten back to the top, and there just aren't that many of them. Tiger's probably the noted exception. And you look at, so that's not going to get better. So we've got those four or five guys that we thought about, all right, they're going to win a whole boatload of majors in the space that we thought Tiger was going to evacuate, and now that space is occupied by Brooks Koepka, who I think will add to his tally. It's reoccupied by Tiger Woods, who conceivably could add to his tally. But then we've got these other up-and-comers who maybe aren't there quite yet to win a major championship. And I think about Matt Wolf. I think about Colin Morikawa. I think about Victor Hovland. Those are kind of the trio of guys probably people are going to focus on for the years to come. Wait a minute.
Are you looking at the questions in advance? The very next question is Colin Morikawa, Victor Hovland, Matthew Wolf. Of the three, which is the first to win a major, and do you think it happens this year? That hand of God.
Well, I'll segue into that. I think Victor Hovland is going to be the guy that stands out from those three in terms of long-term success, in terms of winning major championships. Just because Victor Hovland has a game, I think, that fits best for a major championship. He isn't the longest. That's Matt Wolf. He isn't the best at everything. He isn't the best ball striker. That's Morikawa. But he seems to kind of a way of managing his game in tournaments and playing third and fourth rounds better than any of the three, that he could either back into winning a major and not have to experience the pressure, or he would feel confident being the chaser in a major where he could go track down a two or three shot deficit and then peel one off. So I love Victor Hovland's game. I think he's going to be the guy that breaks through first among them. I know this may be a hot take, but I'm not as well convinced that Matthew Wolf is going to be a long-term prodigious winner on the PGA Tour. I think he could be like Dustin Johnson. He's so long, he can be dominant when he plays right. If he just putts okay, he's probably going to win. But how many times out of 100 is that going to happen?
Yeah, and see, that's what I think about. I think I look at Wolf, and maybe it's because of the quirky swing, but I look at him and I think of Mickelson and I think of Arnold Palmer, and that those were two guys that when they got hot, you couldn't take your eyes off of them. And yep. they were dynamic. They were charismatic. And when Wolf is really on his game with that swinging, that swing's going to hold up under pressure because it's the only one he's ever had. So, right. It's all a matter of him getting hot. But when he gets hot, I think, and Dustin may be a good analogy too, that you're just going to marvel at him. You're going to go, wow, why doesn't this guy win every week?
Yeah, that's what I think about with Dustin Johnson. When you see him play smooth golf, you go, how does he only win like once or twice a year? He should win all the time.
Yes.
And then you see him playing a major and you go, oh, I get it now. And I don't know Matthew Wolf's mental makeup in a major championship cauldron well enough, nor does anybody yet, to know what he's going to be like in that situation when he gets there. But I don't get the sense that he is the kind of guy that plays so consistently from week to week, unlike Victor Hovland, that Victor Hovland's going to rack up top 10 finishes like you won't even believe. He's going to make Rory's backdoor top 10s look ridiculous by comparison, I think. And that'll lead to wins because you just get yourself there. Dustin Johnson gets himself there and then kind of backs off. And I feel like that's kind of the way Matthew Wolf's going to be. And Colin Morikawa, he's just going to be so pure that if the putts go in, he wins. But he's got to figure out how to play better against better competition, because if you look at his limited record so far, weak fields, he's great. But against the better fields, he's still trying to feel his way out as to where his place is and if he can truly compete.
I totally agree. That's Ryan Ballingy of thegolfnewsnet.com. And when we return, he continues to take dead aim at the 2020 golf season with the second part of his 10 predictive question survey presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
We're Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors, and we continue now with our 10 predictive question survey with Ryan Ballingy of thegolfnewsnet.com.
John Rahm, Patrick Cantlay, Schauffele, and DeChambeau. Currently, those are the four guys in the overall World Golf Rankings top 10 who do not have a major on their resume. This year, one, some, or none breakthrough?
I think Rahm gets his this year. He's such a prolific winner at this age, and I realize they're mostly in European tour events, but he's a prolific winner on their biggest stages. I mean, the Rolex Series is his personal ATM, it seems like, since it was created a couple of years ago. And that's great because he's winning against their best fields, and most of those best fields have 10, 15, 20 top 50 players in them, and he's proving to himself he is better than them. He's world number three for a reason. I think that even though we're going to look back on it as maybe a backdoor finish, because it was, getting into the top five of the U.S. Open, I think, was a big deal for him. It proved that he could finish the tournament at that level of leaderboard. You got to make that step, I think, for most people, instead of just winning one. So I think he's got to feel tremendously confident in his ability to get there. He's the European Tour Player of the Year. He's the Race to Dubai winner. There's no reason for me to believe he can't do it. I think the others I have more skepticism about, because Patrick Cantlay seems to kind of waver in big moments. And I just feel like, and maybe I'm personally biased against him, I just feel like he doesn't have the game to finish off those big tournaments. Bryson DeChambeau has transformed his body in such a way that I don't think he's going to know what to do with it until June or July. I mean, he's still making changes. So is he going to be even bulkier or stronger or different than he looks now, having put on 20-25 pounds?
Yeah, I looked at it. I guess I was unaware of this until I saw a picture of him the other day, and there are NFL tight ends who don't look like Bryson DeChambeau. I don't know what he's, who knows what he's thinking. But, I mean, he just, seriously, he looks like Greg Olsen of the Carolina Panthers. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and he has said his goal is to kind of look like a swole gymnast. I mean, he wants that kind of athletic type build, that seems great for golf. I mean, there's pliability, there's strength, there's a lot that goes into that. And I think that's something reasonable to aim to. But when you transform your body, you're transforming your body in real time. It doesn't happen and then you go with it. It takes a while. So he's not at the end of his process yet. He's not in maintain mode yet, at least so it seems. So if he's not, then he's got to figure out his body and his mechanics and all the effects on that as we're going along. And maybe he's so smart, so much smarter than all of us, that he figures it out in a major championship this year while he's doing this whole body transformation. But I just don't think that's likely.
Well, we now have the title for this week's podcast. His goal is to be a swole gymnast. That is the title. Ryan, as he's just fallen out of the top 50 for the first time in more than two decades, victories for Phil Mickelson this year on tour. And again, I'm going to set the number at 1.5.
I'm going to go under. I feel like he entered official midlife crisis mode this year.
Yeah.
When he got into the whole thing about bombs and, just wanted to hit it farther, and he went chasing swing speed, and he got it, by the way. He's hitting it as far as ever, if not farther. But the problem is, he's never been a great fairway finder, and he seems to care even less about that now because he's hitting it just as far as everybody else. And so unless he wants to start hitting accurate bombs, it's not going to really help him all that much. My thought is that, he could still win tournaments. I mean, he won Pebble Beach. He won Mexico. He's won in consecutive seasons. That does count for something. But I just don't get the sense that he's honestly is interested in it. And whatever you think of his Saudi Arabia decision, that leads me to believe he's starting to think about his mortality. And one of the responses to the criticism about him was, this may well have been my last Phoenix Open. I'm going to get a chance to go play somewhere I've never played before. And whether that's a BS excuse or not, it seems to indicate to me that he thinks the sun has just about set on him. And if that's the case, then it might be kind of more desperation than confidence that he could win this year.
You know, Ryan, as a side note, Phil's going to turn 50 at the U.S. Open.
Yep.
Number of PGA Tour Champions majors that Phil plays in this year. I'll set that number at 1.5.
Oh, man, that's a really good question.
I mean, I would not be surprised if he showed up at Newport Country Club for the U.S. Senior Open. I also wouldn't be surprised if he delayed his plane flight from the Open Championship a week and played in that one. I don't know if he's going to play in any more than that, but I could see him playing in those two.
I could, and I could also see him giving a big middle finger to both of them and just saying, nope, I'm not ready for that yet. I'm not old. I can still do it. And his relationship with the USGA is going to be really interesting moving here on out, because he's not going to be – I mean, there's a really good potential he's not exempt into the U.S. Open next year.
Wow.
If he's not exempt, does the USGA say, you know what, we're going to look the other way on you embarrassing us by walking after that putt and hitting it back, and we're going to give you an exemption? Or are we going to say, Phil, we'll see you at sectionals? And I don't know if that's how that's going to go. And then even beyond 50, you know, like once he gets into that senior open qualification territory, does he want to offer the USGA the marketing of being able to say Phil Mickelson's playing in the Senior Open? And I don't know. I mean, Phil's kind of a spiteful guy. And maybe once he gets to the point where he's, you know, 50, 51, he's like, I'm not being smiley, cheery Phil anymore. I'm doing me. Because that's what Saudi Arabia was about. I'm doing me. I want my seven-figure paycheck. I never took it. I'm getting it now. So does that mean he's going to do the same thing to the USGA and go, no, I don't want to play your event. I'm not going to give you the privilege.
I can't tell you how much I love the notion of Phil Mickelson having to go through sectional qualifying. That's spectacular. Ryan Ballingy is with thegolfnewsnet.com. He's our guest taking Dead Aim, 10 predictive questions for 2020. In 2016, all we heard about was how the Olympics weren't important, and golfers were coming up with excuses and reasons right and left not to play. This year, how big a deal is it going to be for the top players to openly pursue spots on their country's Olympic teams?
I think after the success of 2016, I think guys would look foolish, and women for that matter, although almost none of them skipped Rio, to not be interested. I mean, it looked good on TV. It was cool to see golfers on an Olympic stage, and I think that the experience was good enough for both sides, both men and women, that the report back was, you know what, just do it. Don't come up with a lame excuse. Not that there's no Zika, so you can't just make it up this time. You can't just go, oh, a bug might bite me, I can't go.
Yeah, no, stop it. It's like, well, I was talking with Ron Cyrak earlier in the show. Look, they're going to Tokyo. That's going to New York City. Shut up.
Right, exactly. The best excuse you can come up with is, hey, is that nuclear stuff from the earthquake all secured? I mean, I don't want to inhale that. Like, that's the best you got.
Yeah.
So you have no excuse not to go. Golf was well received. They're playing a really great host club, so it's not like it's an untested golf course. And again, you're going to a part of the world that I think most people, if you told them, hey, you can go to Tokyo for free, they would say yes. So I think that they will almost all clamor to be a part of it. And I think that also kind of starts with Tiger. With Tiger saying, you know what, I do want to be on the American Olympic golf team. I do want to go play in that. That's one thing that's not on my resume, and I have probably one shot to do it. So, you know, it's going to matter that he could potentially overtake Patrick Cantlay and become the fourth American, because right now he's right on the edge. So I think for the most part, maybe with one or two exceptions, we're going to see every top player clamor to get into that qualification.
Ryan, the drumbeats for this continue to get louder and louder, and I know it's a subject you're very interested in. In 2020, would you be more surprised if golf's powers that be started to make moves towards equipment bifurcation, or more surprised if they didn't?
The dream scenario for me as someone who's pro rollback is, let's do it. Like, I hope the distance report comes out, and then the same day they go, you know what, this is the smoking gun. We finally come to the conclusion that the ball goes too far for professionals. We're going to scale it back for them, and everybody else gets to use the same balls. But knowing how the USGA in particular feels about the concept of two sets of rules, I don't think they would never go in that direction, I don't think. I don't think they would ever say, we're going to have rules for amateurs and we're going to have rules for professionals. They just don't want to do that. So if they're going to do anything it based on that, they're going to roll back for everybody, which I think is a colossal mistake. I think if they roll back the game for every player, I think that creates a lot of problems for the sport among existing participants. For people who've never played, who don't know what it was like to play in 1995 versus 2020, who cares? They don't know the difference. But if you're someone who's played the game for that long or for any extended period of time and enjoyed the benefits of modern equipment, and the USGA and the RNA come in and say, we've got to take that away from you, sir or ma'am, I don't think that's going to go really well.
Yeah, look, I loved my Hogan Apex blades that I got in 1988. I loved them. I hit some great shots with them. They felt like butter. I'm 50 years old. I don't want to deal with a sweet spot the size of a dime ever again.
Hogan Apex is from 2000, yeah, and I don't want to hit them.
Right. I'm very happy with what I'm doing right now.
Exactly. So if they're going to author a rollback plan, then the rollback has to be, it can't be 30 years. It can't be
right
to that era. We have to acknowledge that materials have changed and that design is better. And we have to acknowledge all of those things. And you could put a cap on performance. You can still do that with a physical number and without having to go back to Persimmon and Bellotta. But how well is that going to be received by the millions of people who play already? And if you're not playing competitively, are you just going to say, you know what, I don't care what you think, I'm going to go find on eBay the illegal golf ball,
right,
my illegal Pro V1s now, and play those? And I think people would do that. So there are a lot of consequences to weigh to what comes out of the distance report that has been put off a couple of different times. It's supposed to come out in 2020 by sometime, early 2020.
True or false, America takes back the Ryder Cup?
I'm going to say true. For as poor as their record has been in the last quarter century, they have done well at home. Obviously, they haven't won an away game since 1993. But if you look at their record at home, excluding the miracle at Medina or the meltdown at Medina, I guess from our perspective, they've been good enough at home to win. And I think if you look at where Europe is right now, they're strong as they're going to get. I mean, they're as strong as they've probably ever been at the top with Rory and Rom, and you've got Fleetwood in there, obviously. But if you look kind of beyond that, it's starting to get a little weaker and a little older. And you look at Matt Fitzpatrick, he's still kind of coming to his own. He's a young guy, but Poulter, probably not going to qualify. Francesco Molinari hasn't been the same since he lost the Masters. Henrik Stenson's in his mid-40s now. That might be a different thing for him. I mean, it's not all there. So I think between kind of having more weak spots underneath and the Americans having much stronger spots up top, I think they should be able to win under Steve Stricker.
All right, get you out of here on this. Ryan Ballingy with thegolfnewsnet.com, our guest taking Dead Aim, 10 predictive questions for 2020. Your bonus, a surprise or gut prediction, anything in the world of golf in 2020, what you got?
Well, Mike, the gut prediction I made last year when I don't even remember. There is audio evidence of this. I think I said the Internationals would win the President's Cup, and I think I'm going to come to regret that next week. So maybe this isn't the kind of best thing to come up with. But I think it's going to have to be related to like the TV deal, because there's so many unknown things right now, and we'll probably find out in a few weeks what's going to go on with that. But I have a feeling the TV landscape is going to change pretty dramatically in golf in 2021, 2022.
Oh, I could not agree more. I think by the time we are having this conversation a year from now, we will know what, like you said, we'll know what's going to happen, and we will be consuming the game of golf 70% differently than we ever have. I think there's just going to be a lot that goes down, and it's going to be seismic. We're going to see people who have been covering golf for 30 years who are no longer going to be covering golf. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot that shakes down.
There's a lot of change that's kind of boiling under the surface. Some brands and publications are just trying to hang on, and some brands that are going to step into the limelight, maybe replace them a little bit, broadcast, print, whatever, you name it. But it's going to be really different in a couple of years from now, how we consume the game. And I just leave it on this note that the PGA Tour announced this year that the players next year, you'll be able to watch every single shot from every single player in real time with cameras on every hole. That is coming to every PGA Tour event at some point in the future. Maybe not in 2020, but it's coming. And that's going to change how we view golf. Hardcore fans view golf, and I think that's going to mean big things for the game.
From thegolfnewsnet.com, that's my friend Ryan Ballingy. Again, I invite you to check out his website and follow him on Twitter. One of the best guys covering golf on a week-in, week-out basis. Also, I'd like to thank Ron Cyrak, a past recipient of the PGA of America's Lifetime Achievement Award in Journalism. Also, you can find his work at roncyrak.com and the Golf Channel for his time and insight this week. Hey, if you're just catching the last little bit of the show, wondering what all we've covered today, no worries. Just subscribe to the Taking Dead Aim podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, B-Pod Studio, Spotify, all the usual podcast outlets, and it will automatically download to the device of your choice. Additionally, a great source of constant golf updates is our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Featured there now. Links to articles on the latest goings-on in and around the game. Weather-wise, not going to be damp, but it may be a little chilly and windy with plenty of opportunity in the Carolinas to tee it up and let this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep it in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter at @CLT_golf guy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.